coming up on Thunder Pop.
Been every voice you have ever heard inside your head.
This is the 114th episode of the Thunderpop podcast. I'm Stephen Presley, and sitting on the screen in front of me is the one and only Master Jedi, Matt Wilkins.
Hey.
Back in the Thunderpop Dome for 114. And Matt, sir, how have you been?
Excellent, Stephen. Thank you so much for having me back, man. I always enjoy being here.
Well, it's been way too long. And of course, you had twins a while back.
Oh, yes, I have. I have two little girls now. They're at this moment 7 months old, and it has been an adventure, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and we postponed a couple of times. We were going to do a follow-up on Cobra Kai, season two of Cobra Kai, and but it's still on my radar. Sometime early next year, I want to get you back and talk Cobra Kai.
Excellent. I'd love to. Yeah. Love that show.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece. There's no doubt about it. I'm loving that show more and more all the time. But in this one, we're about 4 or 5 days away from the Rise of Skywalker. As even you being a person who jumped off the ship, the Star Wars ship.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of. I mean, you still are a fan of the original Legends novels of Star Wars.
Indeed, the way.
And more than just a fan, you are an advocate, a spokesman for their memory and their rights.
Yes, I am. I've been doing my little reviews on YouTube, going through that. It was one continuous story, you know, the comic books, children's novels, regular novels, it all connected. Really impressive story, and so I'm doing my review in chronological order on my YouTube channel right now.
Yeah,
and have been for a couple of years.
Yeah, and that's what you're known for on the interwebs is is your work in making sure people don't forget about the original canon of Star Wars, the Legends.
Oh, yeah. It's been a lot of fun, too. Been a whole lot of fun doing it. Man, it's always fun getting people's different takes. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's kind of like a book. It's kind of like a book review. But at the same time, so, you know, you can go on YouTube and find tons of book reviews on this particular book or story. So I give an overview and then show all the connections that it has to other parts, you know, other comic books, other, you know, novels, other short stories, other, you know, children's books. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of point out all the connections and the significance of certain, you know, storylines. And mm-hmm. So it's been really fun.
Yeah, it's your jam, as they say. That's it. This is Matt Wilkins' jam. And what I want to do in this episode is there's a lot of rumors about the Rise of Skywalker, and to back up just a little bit, let people know, kind of give some people some backstory on Matt. Matt has not, and I assume it's still the same now to this day, you've yet to see any of the new Star Wars live action. Am I correct?
Yeah, as big a fan as I was when Disney took over, they decided to just kind of hit reset.
Yeah.
As far as all the extra, you know, comic books and books and stuff go, kind of hit reset on that story, and of course do movies over it, or do new stories over the stories they've already written.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided that was a good time for me to stop. So I haven't watched any of the new movies or anything like that. I'm not against them, you know. I'm like, mm-hmm. They're just, you know, I just choose not to watch those. I already have my story that I love, and it's the expanded universe.
Have you heard, at least I'm sure you've heard, and you've heard about all the people's, the division, the divisiveness over Last Jedi. You're very aware of that.
Oh,
I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm very aware, and I was very surprised. I remember, 3 months after the movie had come out, and people were still complaining about it. I was like, wow, I couldn't believe this. And, you know, I even, on my own podcast, had brought some people on who, you know, both loved and hated The Last Jedi, and had them kind of, you know, talk about, okay, what did you hate about it? Okay, you're the defender of it. Defend that. Yeah. You know, tell me why it was good and they're wrong. And it was kind of interesting to see, you know, there was a big division in that about fans who that movie just really kind of crossed fans differently. And now you're hearing a bunch of the stars of the movie talk about how that film. I mean, lately they've been getting on going, yeah, Last Jedi wasn't that good. You know, I mean, even they're admitting it now.
Yeah, that's been a big story this week as they've been out now doing press for the Rise of Skywalker. It started to come up, and it first came up with John Boyega, who basically said he called it. I think he called it iffy, the film a bit iffy. I think it was his wording, which was shocking. Now Mark Hamill has spoken out against the use of his character in the film. He's the first to have come out about it from years ago. He was talking about it a few years back.
Well, he was talking about that with Force Awakens, if you recall. He was there's video of him talking to film students going, come on, guys, they're just there to make money, you know. It's one purpose, to make money. It's not really what he'd call art or something. But, I mean, he's always been like that. He's always been kind of critical of missed opportunities, missed ideas, because it just didn't go the way he wanted. It's funny, even though Mark Hamill, I don't believe, knows that much about the expanded universe.
Yeah.
He knows a few things. But the way that he talks about seeing Luke is how Luke is in the original storyline. When I say original, I'm talking about the old books and everything.
Yeah.
In the movies, of course, Luke is a hermit. He gave up on the Jedi. He quits. He runs when things go bad. Yet, if you look at the movie, the original trilogy, Luke is the one who has the most hope when things are at their darkest. Yeah. He sees good in Darth Vader. He sees good. Well, now all of a sudden, he's the biggest cynic. Yeah. Well, how did you go from the biggest optimist to the biggest cynic? That doesn't make any sense. And in the book, they kind of follow that storyline. No, Luke's always sees the good in people. He always sees a path out of there. He is always the optimist.
Yeah.
Han Solo, who in the original trilogy, he starts off as a loner, right? Yeah. No friends. It's just him and Chewie versus the world. He don't need no friends. In fact, he's still trying to get away. He's kind of embarrassed by Empire Strikes Back. That he's still around these people. You know, I'm a loner. I got to keep going. Well, eventually, in the third movie, Return of the Jedi, he figures, this is my family now. And he's there to stay. He's done roaming the galaxy. You know, he's found a home finally. Well, what do we find on episode 7? You know what? It wasn't really working out with him and Leia. I think I'm going to get out of here, dude. I'm going to take off. You know, you raise the kids, I'll be good. You know, I'm good. I'm gone. And it's that didn't sit well with a lot of fans. Like, wait a minute. So he's a bum? Yeah. Well, they hit reset on his character now? Mm-hmm. Why? You know, it makes more sense in the books, where he was a family man. He, you know, grew up with Leia. He grew up being there for his kids through thick and thin. There were ups and downs in Han's life, but he never, you know, gave up on Leia or his family. And that's the kind of Han that you feel should happen after Return of the Jedi. Just like all the story arcs seem to just kind of crash, you know, and kind of shift away, because I guess for episode 7, they had to make everything look so desolate, you know, to get you worried. But in the books, at that point in time, our characters are still together. They're still strong, and they've gone through, you know, I mean, trials and temptations, but they've still stick together, because they've, you know, they bonded together, and they just grew as characters. And so whenever I heard Mark Hamill talk about how he kind of felt Luke Skywalker should be portrayed, I was like, well, yeah, that's the expanded universe there. That's their storyline. It just makes a lot more sense. That's just me. Again, you could say, well, Matt, you never really watched the movie, so you don't really know. That is totally true, and someone's very fair to point that out. But at the same time, this is what everyone has told me, what Luke, Han, Leia, you know, what they're all like now, and they feel that it doesn't match up with the characters that they remember mm-hmm. from the original trilogy. So, yeah. I mean, it boils down to perspective and opinion when it comes down to it. But to me, it just feels like the books did a better or more solid story with the main characters than the movies gave them a shot.
Yeah. And that, so on this show, this episode, you being an expert, being an encyclopedia of the Legends Star Wars, there's rumors of different things that are going to be in the new movie. And I want to run a few by you. One in particular, really, that stands out was there was many reports this past year, whether J.J. Abrams would actually consider using time travel in Episode 9. And I know that was used in the original canon. Star Wars Rebels had some time travel, reference to time travel. So I want to ask you about that. We'll get into that in this episode. And we're talking about the divisiveness of Last Jedi. If we talk about the negatives, I think it's also important to bring up the positives. I know you have not been able to go out of your house, leave the house without hearing about how great The Mandalorian is, or how happy people are with The Mandalorian.
Correct.
So I know you've also heard the positives here lately of some positive news coming out of Star Wars, and the fact that people are very, very happy and pleased, and it's actually reunited the fan base at least for a week until that new movie comes out. Are you at least a little bit curious to see The Mandalorian?
Not at all. It doesn't deal with this. I am happy people are enjoying it. Yeah. But for me, it just doesn't fit in with my story. The reason that I love Star Wars, and I grew to love Star Wars even more, was because of the books, was because of this legend story. Yeah. That's what I loved about Star Wars, more than the movies themselves, actually. Yeah. I mean, I always loved the movies as a kid growing up, but just like everyone else, I moved on. As a kid, we all did.
Yeah.
Because after Return of the Jedi, nothing else was coming out, we thought. And so we just moved on with our lives.
Yeah.
And then when Timothy Zahn's trilogy hit, a few years later, everyone's like, oh, what's this? And it kind of reunited everyone's love of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And Lucasfilm made a very smart decision right then and there, say, okay, we're going to make everything connect. And that was so unique because no sci-fi franchise to this day has been able to do something on that scale.
No.
And when I saw how things were kept connecting and how things got better and better, they got better with their storytelling, I just fell in love with Star Wars. And when they said, okay, we're going to get rid of this and hit the reset button, I thought, I spent all this time watching them build this beautiful story.
Yeah.
And now they say, well, we're done. You want to start all over again with us? No, not really. Yeah. it was my turn to get off the bus, you know. And so I did, and I made that decision the moment I heard they were, resetting the canon. I was like, well, okay. I wasn't happy with that, of course. But again, Lucasfilm owns the rights. They can do whatever they want to with the story. And I realized that, but I was like, well, I'm currently focused on getting Lucasfilm to continue the story, as an alternate universe.
Yeah, and I want to ask you for an update on that too. So we'll get on that too.
Yeah,
and it's funny you mentioned something that'll be a great segue, because at the top of the show we're going to have review in the trailer, and our review in the trailer today is Ghostbusters Afterlife, which actually at some point in time Ghostbusters was trying to do what you say Star Wars has done now, or has done, in asking us to restart and forget about the past. That happened with Ghostbusters. But now, it seems like they may be riding the ship. A lot of people were upset when they did that, as you know, I'm sure. And same thing with Karate Kid. Something similar happened with the Karate Kid, where at one point in time, they tried to reboot. And then they went back, and they started from where they left off with the original Karate Kid universe. And that's worked out quite nicely for them, I would say. Wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
So now, indeed,
yes.
So now maybe that's what's happening with Ghostbusters. Well, that is what's happening with Ghostbusters. And so we're going to talk about that. We'll have our usual agree or disagree and all our thoughts and advice and all our other usual tropes right after this. Yeah. And Matt Wilkins, thank you, sir, for joining me. And there was a little bit of anticipation whether you were going to be able to join me tonight there for a little while. I was anticipating and waiting. And so it turns out just a tired dad of twins kind of fell asleep before we were about to start recording.
And I'm talking like 15 minutes before, too. I was getting all excited.
Yeah.
I sat down on the couch and went, oh, man. I said, you know, I'm just going to just stretch my eyes a little bit. 45 minutes later, I woke up in a panic. I was like, I knew immediately when I woke up, I was like, oh, my gosh. I played stare out with my little girl till 2:30 this morning, yesterday morning.
Yeah.
It was the weirdest thing. She would just not go to bed. She was not. If she didn't want me holding her, she was struggling. No, kind of grimpy. Let me play. And so I did. And at 12 o'clock, I turned off all the lights but the Christmas tree. At 1 o'clock, the Christmas tree went out. I left her in complete darkness, took away all her toys, and just plopped her in the middle of the room. I sat there on the couch, and we played stare out for another hour and a half while she was just playing with the little slippers, looking up on me, giving me a smile, letting me know, Dad, I'm nowhere near going to sleep. And then finally she crashed on the carpet, whined for maybe 30 seconds, and then passed out to where I could put her in her crib. It was the most horrible thing. I could not figure it out. I mean, she was not super fussy as long as I wasn't touching her. She just wanted to be left alone. She wanted to play. And I mean, 6 hours from, she woke up from a nap at 8 o'clock, and 6 hours later, finally, down goes Frazier. It was the happiest and most amazing thing I'd ever seen someone do. She was in it for the all night marathon. Daddy was not.
No, you were. It was a bit of a standoff there for a little while.
Oh, at the OK Corral, we were just staring each other down, and she was tired, but she would not. I put her down like maybe three different times. I fed her three times, changed her diaper a couple of times. I mean, just did everything I could to make her as nice and comfortable as she could to go to bed. I'm thinking, we're going to pull an all-nighter here, you know. And I was dead tired when I came home. My wife's like, well, do you need to stay? Because I went over to my parents' house to eat. And I was like, no, let me go. And I got my energy back, man, you know, just visiting with family and everything. So I went back and got some stuff cleaned. I was like, oh, I got a few minutes here. And so made the mistake and slowed down.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so and we started kind of late because I asked if we could start after 8:45 because I was going to take my son to Santa Claus tonight. So we had a Santa Claus, our third Santa Claus run. This is our third time we've gone to see Santa Claus. So we went to get, and this year, you know, he's starting to become more independent and he's walking around more. He's moving around and very mobile now. And we went through they had Santa in this kind of giant treehouse at this outdoor shopping complex here in Austin. We call it the Domain. And so we went through, it's like this walk-through treehouse, and you get in line, and then you go in when it's your turn. And we did the pictures. We got some digital prints of the pictures. But yeah, we go, they take like three shots, or they do different poses and stuff, and then Santa talks to your son or daughter and sees what they want for Christmas, and the parents can sit there with you too if you'd like. So we're done. We go back throughout the treehouse the other side, and new people are going through. It's new people's turn to go in, and we're off to the side sitting down for a little bit, and my son decides he wants to go back in. So he's trying to get back. He's trying to go back into the treehouse to see Santa for a second visit. He wasn't done visiting with Santa Claus. So we kept having to go back and retrieve him and tell him, hey, look, you only get one turn.
You only get one shot at Santa.
Yeah, you only get one shot at Santa. You can't just go back in. And it's not like a... So anyway, he didn't quite get that. He thought he could just go back in and visit some more with Santa. So he was trying to cut back through the line and get back into the treehouse to see Santa some more. And
oh, man.
So, yeah, that was amusing. That was pretty amusing. So kids, you got to love them. And speaking of kids, this new Ghostbusters movie is going to feature kids a lot. as we we've heard for weeks, we've heard for months. Now I know you followed. Were you a big fan of the Ghostbusters back in the back in the 1980s?
Of course, just like everyone else, I fell in love with the Ghostbusters when the movie came out. My parents wouldn't let us see it back in the day because it said ghost, and that would scare my little brother. And because it scared my little brother, we were even allowed to watch Scooby-Doo.
Yeah,
because it had ghost in it, and it scared my brother one time, and it gave him nightmares. And so we were done. So I'm not a Scooby-Doo fan because I never grew up on Scooby-Doo because my little brother was a coward. We couldn't even watch Wizard of Oz. We watched it once because he got scared of the Wicked Witch. And then my wife, my mom was like, "Nope, you can't watch Wizard of Oz anymore. It scares your little brother." So we had to see it on home video about a year or so later when it came out, and of course loved it. Classic. And my wife is actually a fan of the sequel too, so she's a fan of the Ghostbusters period. We watched the cartoon as a kid. We could get away with that.
The real Ghostbusters.
So we used to watch that all the time. So there's a lot of you know, I'm not one of these uber fans. I have recently discovered there are, as big as I am into Star Wars expanded universe, there are Ghostbusters fans just like me.
Yeah,
for that I am with Star Wars, they are with Ghostbusters, and it's just so impressive. And you know, the 2016 movie slash reboot was a huge disappointment to all of those fans. Who it was like they gave the fans nothing that they wanted, and this seems to be something that they really want, and they are. I'm talking to both of them actually recently when the trailer dropped, and they cannot wait. They cannot wait for this movie.
Yeah. No, and this was the one, this was the, well, here's the thing. I was against the 2016 Ghostbusters, and not because it was a female led Ghostbusters. I didn't have a problem with it being a female led Ghostbusters. In fact, I really liked the actresses that were in that movie. I think they're all very funny, and they all bring in their own style and personality and talent to any movie that they're in or any project that they're a part of. But I the problem I always had with Ghostbusters was the problem that I had with the Karate Kid reboot before Cobra Kai, and is that it didn't link to the original universe. And for me, it was just like you were talking about with Legends and how Star Wars started from scratch and reset things. That was what, in a little bit different fashion, in that it still had the original cast and it still had the original characters, but it was resetting things from the expanded universe, from the original the original canon. But that was the thing with Ghostbusters. I never understood why they could not have made the female-led Ghostbusters connect to the original universe. That never made any sense to me. I was like, you could have new Ghostbusters in 2016. I mean, in fact, it makes total sense to have new Ghostbusters in 2016 because, let's face it, the original Ghostbusters at this point in time, I mean, how old is Bill Murray now?
Oh, ancient now.
Yeah, so... It made total sense for there to be some type of handoff. If you were going to do new Ghostbusters, it made total sense for there to be some kind of handoff to a new, younger generation. But I didn't understand why it had to reset things and then say, oh, that 80s Ghostbuster, which, by the way, is a classic, one of the classic movies of all time, one of the biggest box office comedies of all time. Oh, that didn't exist. We're starting off from scratch. That just never made any sense to me. I thought it was bad marketing. I thought it was bad. It was a bad decision. I thought it was lazy. I could go on and on, but it divided the fan base. And yeah, there are some sexist people out there that also didn't like that it was a female Ghostbusters movie. But that wasn't. I don't think that was the biggest issue that that the majority of the people had with the film.
I was about to say there's no way that was a majority of the fans. They were labeled that way, which angered a bunch of people too.
Right, right.
And when you start name calling, baseless name calling, oh, you don't like it because of this. No, that's not what I said. Oh, whatever. Okay, then, you know what? You have your own little beliefs and you want to be insulting, then fine. And it seems like we play politics with people who don't like certain movies. If you don't like Wonder Woman, you don't like women. You know, if you don't like Black Panther, you don't like minority superheroes. And I don't think it's the case. I just, you just, if you can look at a movie now, and no one we're just in that world where it's easier to, instead of accept responsibility, to say, like Ron Howard, when Solo came out and it underperformed, his words were not, well, you know what? There's just a bunch of people in there who hate that Lando's in it or something. You know, he didn't even do that. He just said, well, I thought we made a good film. I'm sorry people didn't feel that way because I thought we made a good film. That's a proper response.
Yeah.
Say, I thought we made a good film. I'm sorry people didn't think so. That was a stand-up response from Ron Howard, a director who sincerely thought he made a good film. People didn't like it. I hate that you guys didn't like it. I felt it was pretty good, but oh well. You know, he's not going to sit there and make excuses, make complaints, or call fans racist, bigots, fill in the blank. You know, he's not going to call them anything. And I thought that was a stand-up way for a director to deal with, you know, a flop or an underperforming movie, I should say.
Yeah, and that movie didn't flop. It wasn't Ron Howard's fault that movie flopped.
No, I still believe Kathleen Kennedy and all her, you know, firings through different, you know, when you have a trouble with a film, this is almost any film, you're firing a director, you have this conflict between, okay, well, it's already starting off as a mess.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and there's a lot of variables with that. It came out right after one of the most divisive movies, not just of Star Wars, but of all movies. It's one of the most divisive movies of all time, The Last Jedi, and it was very close to the time after that movie had been in theaters. It was the closest window between two Star Wars movies in the theaters that there had ever been. So there was the saturation possibility. There was also the issue with the last film. People were boycotting Star Wars after that. And then, there's other variables like the firing of the original directors and Ron Howard having to come in late in the game and do all those reshoots and to try to please the Lucasfilm powers to be.
It's hard for a director because they're tasked with not spending too much more additional funds. But at the same time, they're asked to having to basically rewrite the whole thing, but use whatever pieces you still can and try to save us money. And it's handicapping a director before because Ron Howard didn't get to tell his complete vision. He had to use what they had already built and then, you know, cut and tape, paste the pieces together, which is always rough for any film, period.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No matter who's involved and what's happening. It's hard to rebound from that. So now, by the way, this new Ghostbusters also has a female protagonist. One of the main characters in this film is the young girl with the glasses that's going to play the daughter that is the granddaughter of the guy that left this farmhouse to his daughter and grandkids. And she's obviously going to be one of the main protagonist characters. And I don't have a problem with the fact that one of the main protagonists of this film is a female, because this film is actually giving us what we all wanted to begin with. And that was acknowledging that the original Ghostbusters existed and that this is a, so you've seen the trailer, I know, correct already?
Yes.
I'm going to go ahead and roll it and then we can discuss it.
In Somerville anyway.
Honestly,
what are you doing here in Somerville anyway?
Honestly, my mom won't say it, but we're completely broke. And the only thing that's left in our name.
So we were talking about the young girl, who, by the way, she's been in a lot of stuff. I don't know her name right off the top of my head, but she's been in a lot of stuff, like bit parts and sitcoms. She was in the new Fuller House. She had a recurring role playing the girlfriend of the young boy that is Jesse's son on the show of Full House, the Full House reboot. So I know she's had a recurring role in there, and I've seen her on a lot of TV shows and stuff. So, but she's blonde normally, so she dyed her hair dark and wears glasses in this. So theories I read months ago was that she was going to be Harold Ramis's character in Ghostbusters, his granddaughter, the late Harold Ramis, his character, the granddaughter. And if you see the dark hair, the glasses, it seems like that's kind of like what they're sort of leading into.
Passing down the character traits of Egon. Correct.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's, yeah, that Egon. And it, obviously we know Harold Ramis passed away. The late Harold Ramis passed away before he was able to participate in another Ghostbusters movie. But might still be participating in this movie because Jason Reitman, the son of Ivan Reitman, who scripted and directed this film, has said that we probably would get some old footage of that was unused of Harold Ramis's old unused footage from the first Ghostbusters movie, and I think maybe even Ghostbusters 2 unused footage could still be repurposed and used in this film. And we thought, we talked about this on our last episode, this the theory that he may come back as the in the form of a ghost in this film himself.
I think it's a neat way to maybe bring, you know, the four back together. I think they're going to do, I think they're going to do fans right. I am excited for Ghostbusters fans, these hardcore fans that were very disappointed in 2016, then called sexist when they didn't like the movie. And it just seems like they just got kicked by everyone. And now they're finally getting, you know, what they've always wanted. And in true form, instead of just sitting there and complaining and picking apart what this trailer doesn't have in it yet, I've heard nothing but positiveness from the Ghostbuster fandom about this.
Yeah, because in the film, it acknowledges, it shows the original Ghostbusters and Paul Rudd's character, which, again, I love that casting. I think Paul Rudd's going to bring a nice bit of energy and fun to the movie.
I love Paul Rudd, yes.
So I love that casting. He references how we haven't had ghosts in 30-something years, which also a lot of people laughed about that and said how that was a dig on the Ghostbusters 2016 because it immediately is doing to Ghostbusters 2016 what Ghostbusters 2016 ironically did to original Ghostbusters, and it casted it off immediately.
And the Paul Rudd memes on the internet right now are friggin' hilarious.
Oh, I haven't seen them, but I can only imagine. I can only imagine.
Yeah.
So we'll go ahead and play some more.
It's this creepy old farmhouse our grandfather left us in the middle of nowhere. Why'd you bring me up here?
Entertainment value.
What is that?
I don't know.
Somehow, a town that isn't anywhere near a tectonic plate, that has no fault lines, no fracking, no loud music even, is shaking on a daily basis.
So, is a little in this trailer, it's a little bit Stranger Things, Goonies meets Ghostbusters.
I would agree. I think they're playing it safe right now. This is more of a teaser, in my opinion, for me, because they haven't really shown everything that could be. You're kind of even, not confused, but you don't have a good idea of what the story is involving yet.
Yeah.
But we don't need to know all that yet. No. I kind of hate when a trailer gives everything away too.
Especially this early on,
I think this trailer's purpose was to set the tone and say, we're getting back to the roots. We're doing this for fans. This is the way it should be done, you know. Please don't give up on this franchise. We still want to get your money.
Pretty much. I mean, what happened was that there's been an attempt. In 2016, that was an attempt to reboot the franchise and make a new series of Ghostbusters films with that new cast. And they wanted to get back on the list, merchandising and making it a part of people's, you know, spending habits. So that didn't work. And it almost all but killed the franchise in 2016. So this is really kind of like, okay, we're caving in. We're finally going to get what the internet was asking for. This is our last effort. And, you know, it's really hard to get Bill Murray to come into work. So I'm amazed that they got him to come in for the 2016 Ghostbusters to do that cameo. But then to get him to come back again in 2019, it took him years to come back to do any Ghostbusters at all. So I don't know. I guess he realizes if it's now or never.
Yeah, it's good that they do it now before. I agree. It is too late. You know, they missed their chance. And I am extremely surprised they even are doing this. Because after 2016, usually when you have a reboot, it usually sticks or they're done and they move on. They really don't go back. If you think about it, Cobra Kai is a rare example.
It's one of the rare examples.
Yeah, them coming back after a reboot wasn't as successful as they wanted it to be. Yeah. Successful meaning they wanted it to turn into a new franchise and couldn't get it off the ground.
And we're talking about the one with Will Smith, with Jackie Chan. And
right. Will and Smith's I'm a huge son. Jackie Chan fan, so it was like that was one of the few reboots that I went ahead and gave a shot.
Yeah.
Because I love Jackie Chan. I thought, okay, this could be interesting, but it just didn't pull it out.
Yeah.
And so having Cobra Kai come back and them going back to the original story and building on top of it was very rare. You hadn't seen that before. And now we're starting to see that a little bit more. And I like that we're seeing this. I think this is really good.
Well, I think if you don't get Cobra Kai and it's not successful, you don't get this Ghostbusters actual, like real Ghostbusters reboot.
That's true.
And revitalization, I guess you should call it.
Yeah. And the thing is, what they're doing with the Ghostbusters is also unique, too, because you think about TV shows that are getting renewed. It's not the movies, but they did it with a TV show. Cobra Kai did it solid. To be honest, they brought back X-Files after a super long hiatus.
Yeah,
and it was actually pretty good, pretty decent. Chris Carter had some excellent ideas. Of course, he had no idea where he was taking the main storyline. I think everyone can see that now. But at least he still had some good ideas for those last two, those additional two seasons he did. So we saw a little bit of that, and I was like, ooh, I want to see more of this. And now we're seeing that in movies with this new Ghostbusters film. And if it's successful, I think this could open up the door even wider to see, you know, what got rebooted that really could. I mean, what's his name who played Freddy Krueger? I can't think of his name right now.
Yeah,
he had always talked about he had one more Freddy left in him back in the day.
Yeah,
before they rebooted, he could have done it one more time. He thinks now. I don't know if he'd be interested in coming back, but that reboot failed.
Yeah.
And they don't know what to do. Maybe bring the original back if he can do it. I don't know if he'd be willing to now. Yeah. He's getting older. But it gives me hope that if Ghostbusters is doing it, then maybe some of these other franchises that we thought were dead because they got the reboot treatment and failed, maybe they're not. Maybe Hollywood's, and I know Hollywood's sitting and watching what this film's going to do, because if it does, then you know everyone's, this is Hollywood for crying out loud. We'll copy a moneymaker. You know, ever since the Marvel franchise films came out, what has Hollywood wanted to do? They've wanted to get franchises off the ground. No matter how ridiculous the franchise may sound, everyone's looking for that big Marvel franchise moneymaker now, because that's just how we find that people like that. But what are we finding here? No surprise, folks. The same reason I'm tying this back into the expanded universe now. We like it when we see our movies connect.
Yeah.
We like it when we see stories build on top of each other, and especially stand on the shoulders of other pre-established storylines, like Cobra Kai. We've talked about Cobra Kai before on this podcast, where the most amazing thing about it is they don't include just the first movie and skip over the last few, like Terminator Dark Fate did.
Mm-hmm.
They build on top of all three movies. And that's what makes Cobra Kai even more special, that they're just honoring the franchise in itself. I think a reason, I hate to, sidetrack us here, but I think a reason Terminator Dark Fate didn't work is because they're like, oh, here's a reboot of the last three Terminator films, but not the first two.
Right.
Fans are like, you know what? I'm done. It was when I saw Genesis, I was done. I was like, this is garbage.
Yeah.
And I had zero. I love Linda Hamilton. I was so happy to hear that she was back. And I was so disgusted when they said, again, because remember what Genesis said? Oh, we're going to reboot Terminator 3 and Salvation, because we know you guys didn't like that. And then here comes Dark, when it didn't work, here comes Dark Fate going, okay, now we're going to reboot Terminator 3, which I didn't mind, Salvation, which I loved, because I loved that they were getting away from the time travel story and finally showing us the war.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get rid of Genesis. Great. Yeah, I hate Genesis too, but we're just going to ignore them. We're not even going to try to do a little loophole like Genesis did. We're just going to ignore them all. Oh, God. And I don't even know what you call this, a reboot but a revival at the same time?
Because
you look at Halloween. We're skipping everything but Halloween 1, and here's the new. No. I gave you, H2O was the soft reboot, even though it could fit in the series. But they keep wanting to reboot things and redo the story, and fans aren't interested in that.
They want continuations, and the best continuations are ones that can connect to all the original stories. Like you're saying. Oh, by the way, that's Robert Englund. That was the original.
Robert Englund, yeah, thank you.
And he was a very notable thing about him is he was Mark Hamill's roommate.
Yes, he was. Back, he tells a lot of stories about that.
Years ago, when he was first cast as Luke Skywalker, when he was auditioning to be Luke Skywalker in Star Wars, they were roommates. So they both went on to have pretty good careers.
Yeah, they did.
In their own. And then also Robert Englund, V, the miniseries and the series. He was in that as well. Probably after Freddy Krueger, that's his next biggest role, was playing Willy on V. In the original television edition of V. So the and by the way, the X-Files, I think they would have kept doing those X-Files because Fox, I think, was very happy with the production and the ratings, I think, were really good. But it was Gillian Anderson didn't want to keep doing them, apparently.
Yeah, supposedly she and David Duchovny still, even though it was nice to work together, there's still friction between those actors, and they just don't mix well.
Wow.
And it's sad. It's sad that that happened. But, you know, Jillian's like, okay, we did this. I'm still not a David Duchovny fan.
Yeah.
So I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it was a polite thing.
Yeah.
A polite breakup. At the same time, though, oh, man, the fans were really enjoying that. And it's sad two actors just – and it was just – I think it's just too – the chemistry wasn't there. The personalities aren't there. They're different. I don't think it's one person's fault over the other.
Right.
It's sad when that happens. But we did get to what I thought were just above excellent seasons of X-Files.
Oh, because of it. Absolutely. Absolutely. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was really felt like getting the rug pulled out from under me when it was over. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm glad we got a little bit of it while we did. Getting into this Ghostbusters back to the afterlife, Ghostbusters Afterlife. I think from what I'm seeing in this trailer so far, I think the setup is that this is going to be Egan's the grandfather. This is his old farmhouse. After the Ghostbusters program dissolved, after Ghostbusters 2, I think he kind of took everything and kind of went out and kind of went off the grid, so to speak, in this farmhouse. And I think he took everything with him and went as far off the grid as he could in this little town, kind of out. Looks like it could be in the Midwest somewhere, kind of out in the middle of nowhere, and just became a hermit, and left everything there. And then when he passed away, he apparently at some point he did have an offspring because he has a daughter who we see the mom in this movie now, who is apparently broke or struggling financially, which is why they end up in this living in this one thing that they've got, this one asset they have is this farmhouse. So we'll see Egan's granddaughter and Egan's daughter, and then Paul Rudd playing their teacher in this town that they moved to. So I think that's what and then I think something happens. The ghosts are going to be released and all hell's going to break loose again. And then I think at some point the original Ghostbusters there's going to be time to, how do they say, give them a call again?
Yeah. give them a call.
Yeah. Give them a call.
I really hope that once this movie comes out, that Dan Aykroyd writes a book about the making of Ghostbusters 3, because this has been a film that's been in Dan Aykroyd's wheelhouse for decades.
Yeah.
He has always wanted to do a third one. It has changed. I don't know if you remember this. We heard Chris Farley rumors.
Yeah,
as Chris Farley's going to be the new Ghostbuster.
Yeah.
Bill Murray was the lone standout for years.
Mm-hmm.
They had Bill Murray coming back as a ghost because he was dead in one alternate script version. And I would love to hear Dan Aykroyd talk about the failed attempts to get this movie made. And then finally, but you thought the book was closed when 2016. Everyone thought the book was closed when 2016 came out.
Yeah, it didn't seem likely there was going to be more.
And then Harold Ramis dies, and you're thinking, okay, well, that's it now. Now this is that's the thing. That's the most incredible thing about this movie. No one thought it was going to happen.
No.
It was so far impossibility. Because everyone, after the death of the actor and after 2016, fell through. They said, well, they're not going to give this franchise a shot again.
Do you think Stranger Things and the success of Stranger Things could have opened some doors for this story as
well?
That's
a grand possibility because, as you know, Stranger Things kind of reignited people's love of throwback 80s stuff. We got tons of copycats coming out there, some good, some bad. But to be honest, it has been nice to see that. Kind of how, if you remember back in the 2000s, the 70s were revived with that 70s show.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the 90s or in the 80s, it was all about 60s movies, you know. Yeah. Spielberg and all of them were going back to the 60s for us. So we've always had this love of throwback 20 years ago or 30 years ago. And I think you're really seeing that because who's making the films now? People from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going back and making great, authentic films that felt real, just like they did in the 80s. They made great 60s feeling films and 50s feeling films because that was the age of the filmmakers when they were kids, and they just loved that nostalgia, and they came back. And nostalgia sells if done correctly.
George Lucas making pre-Star Wars, making American Graffiti.
Exactly.
About the 50s. Which was mm-hmm. his time, his era when he was growing up as a kid, and he was really into the cars and that story. So yeah,
and they want to recapture that love, and you know you can do that. I mean, going to baseball, Billy Crystal did a movie called 61, mm-hmm. and it was based off the old Yankees, you know, Roger mm-hmm. Maris, Mickey Mantle days, and he had an amazing attention to detail. Even if you're not a baseball fan, I think you'd love the look of this film. It looks so great. But to just tell you how much detail Billy Crystal went into it, he had to go back to the old Yankee Stadium and find someone who had some of those seats, mm-hmm. and he had to peel back some of the colors to find that original green or lemon green or lime green. I can't remember what color it was. But they said he searched everywhere because he knew someone, some collector had an old Yankee Stadium chair, and they had to carefully peel the paint off until they got to that green paint that he remembered as a kid. But he wanted to match it exactly, that paint color. And it was painstaking detail and attention to detail in that movie that makes it just stunning to watch. And he's not the only one that does that because I think we talk about Stranger Things. Yeah. Holy cow, when I saw that, I had never seen a throwback 80s movie like that. I mean, some of the bed sheets they were using, I almost fell out of my seat. I was like, holy cow, those are my parents. They found my parents' bed sheets from when I was a kid. No jokes. I remember I called my brother, said, he said, you saw mom and dad's bed sheets, didn't you? I said, yes, I can't believe that. It's just a little 80s design that somehow they had in the movie. I was like, shut up. This is real 80s. Not just a, hey guys, remember the Rubik's Cube? Hey guys, remember skateboarding? You know, it wasn't like, oh, here's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles again. No, it was like real authentic things. The look and feel and the design, some of the clothes. I was like, yeah, I remember that, man. I even thought 80s clothes were ugly back then. The whole gray, orange, you know, yellow stripe. Why is brown and orange our big colors in the 80s? I don't understand that.
Yeah.
We were colorblind back then. The early 80s were not nice when it comes to style. But yeah, I think the Stranger Things really kicked that out. And so this attention to detail and going back and throwing back to movies in that age, that's a good point. It's a good possibility that was part of the reason. I think another part was, I think even after the failure of 2016, wasn't Dan Aykroyd again beating his drum for a third one? Is that true?
Yeah. No, he absolutely was. Yeah. He absolutely was.
So that man has kept the candle
He's
burning.
Never given up. This probably does not happen if it wasn't for that fire in his gut to make this happen. He kept persistently pushing for it. Now, do you think this Jason Reitman, Dan Aykroyd project, do you think this was something that was already on the table pre-2016, where they had offered this as an option, and the studio still ended up going with the option that they went with in 2016?
That is really hard to say. That's why I want Dan Aykroyd to come up with this autobiography about this.
Yeah.
Because I'd love to hear when we got this conception of the storyline. Was it before or after or during? You know, I just don't. There's so many rumors out there. It's hard to tell what's true and what's not. But if anyone knows, it's Dan Aykroyd.
We should make that documentary in a couple of years.
Oh, I'd love. I would. I, honestly, I'd be more interested in that than Ghostbusters 3 itself. Yeah.
The story behind it.
The story behind it, I think, is just would be just interesting. I don't know if you've seen the documentary Superman Lives. It's the documentary of Tim Burton's failed Superman project and like some of the test footage they show, and they talk about what was conceived and what was going to be happening until they decided to wipe it.
Yeah.
It's so fascinating to me. I'm not even a big Superman fan, and I just love that documentary because it's basically showing off the ideas and creative instinct that Tim Burton had while developing. I didn't know how far along development was for that movie with Tim Burton.
Yeah. No, they were doing screen tests. Costumes were being fitted.
Oh, yeah. It was rolling. It was being greenlit all the way and then came to a sudden stop.
Yeah, but they were ready to go. They were ready to go.
Yeah, I had no idea. So I like hearing the behind the scenes, and a lot of times the behind the scenes are more interesting. I'm not saying Ghostbusters 3 is going to be terrible. I'm just saying that as interests go, I know Ghostbusters fans would feel the same way too. Mm-hmm. They would love to hear how this story, how Ghostbusters 3 evolved from 20 years ago to to today.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I think there's a good documentary someday to be made about George Lucas selling Star Wars to Disney.
Oh, yeah.
And in the early days of Lucasfilm being owned by Disney. There's some stories there behind the
scenes. It's a long way in coming, but yeah, eventually.
Yeah, that's gonna be many years before that happens.
One day we'll see it.
And they won't get direct participation from George Lucas to make it. They won't probably get, they definitely won't get involvement from actual Disney or Lucasfilm to make the documentary, but someone would make the, you know, the unauthorized documentary about that at some point. And it's going to be really, it could be really good.
Yeah, agree.
Speaking of Star Wars, now getting into The Rise of Skywalker is coming out in less than a week. This will be the, as they've promoted the film, the finale of the saga, the Skywalker saga. So, Star Wars actually has been doing really well lately. The Mandalorian is a huge hit. And I will say it is some of the best television that's on right now that I've seen in a while. I mean, it's up there for me. It's up there. I hate to say it, but it's up there with Stranger Things, Cobra Kai. It's just a really well-done show. And, I mean, the names that are attached to it, Kevin Feige and Dave Filoni, you know, there's guys that they've got a resume. They've done some pretty good things, but there's been a lot of rumors about Rise of Skywalker. Some positive press, some not so positive press. There's been rumors of reshoots. There's been rumors of scripts constantly being rewritten throughout the production. There's been some, you know, also PR saying, hey, this is the way we did Force Awakens too. This is not unusual. This is the way movies are made. This is not an unusual thing. There's drama queens on the internet that make YouTube videos that are talking about how the leaks from this movie are wrecking their world. Some of the Star Wars fans are saying things like, it's giving me nightmares when I hear the leaks from this movie. So, but there's been a lot of rumors for a number of months about the possibility, and JJ is known for doing this because what he did with the Star Trek films and bringing in time travel and using that as a way to drive the plot and the story, and also a way for him to reset the timeline, which is what he did with Star Trek. So now I want to ask you about time travel and its history in the legends, Star Wars.
Okay. In the Legends universe, we didn't have time travel. We could go back in time.
Right.
You could flow walk in the Force, which meant you could go back and look at memories, imprinted events in the past, but you could never change it. You were basically just watching a video, a 3D version of a video that's happening around you. You couldn't interact with it or change it. In one of the books, Jason Solo, son of Han and Leia Solo, tells someone that yeah, there is a way we can change the past. Well, it turns out he's lying, just like a Sith. He's a Sith at this point.
Okay.
And he's just trying to get someone to join the dark side, join the Sith, much like how Palpatine did with Anakin in Episode 3, saying, yeah, we can bring people back to life. We're looking into this. No, well, yeah, you okay. can't do that. You're just doing that to entice Anakin Skywalker.
Right.
So that was the similarity there. So there was no proof that flow walking could change the past. And then the only thing, as time travel goes, there was one book where a group of Sith got hurtled into the future. You know, they flew through time, but it went into the future. They could not go back. But their ship did shoot them into the future. So that's really the only event of time travel that we have. Now, in the new canon, I think time travel does exist, correct? You mentioned Rebels.
Rebels got into it in the later episodes.
Okay. And it's a terrible thing to hear that, because I've always hated time travel. You have a huge issue when you apply the rules of time travel in mm-hmm. your sci-fi. You have big, big issues. You have big, big questions. You really have to unhook your brain to enjoy it. I love me some Star Trek, but you can run yourself stupid with all their time travel stuff.
Yeah.
Time travel is rarely done well.
Did you like the J.J. Abrams Star Trek, or was it time travel a big issue for you?
I thought the first one was okay. I despise the second one. How dare you take Wrath of Khan, an excellent storyline, and make a mockery out of it? And then the third one I thought was fantastic. I thought it was the best of the three, to be honest. And I was really shocked, because at that point, I was almost done with the series. I said, well, I'll watch the third one only because I watched the first two, and I was blown away by how good the third one was.
Yeah. No, I liked it. I liked what they did. I thought it was a nice rebound from the second one, which I thought was one of the weakest movies, period, in the Star Trek history.
Star Trek fans voted, what was it called? What's the Tim Allen ripoff?
The
joke ripoff.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
I can't remember, but when they voted to see best to worst Star Trek films, Galaxy Quest.
Galaxy Quest. A great movie. I love Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, Galaxy Quest is great. But Galaxy Quest fans rated over that Into Darkness.
Oh, easily.
They thought Galaxy Quest was just a better movie, as, you know, did more justice to Star Trek than Into Darkness did, which was just horrendous. Horrendous. The first movie is your classic. It's The Force Awakens. JJ plays it safe with the fans.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad. It wasn't great, but it was good enough to where when I saw the second one, I was like, oh, this is great. And then, of course, the rumor came out it was Khan, and JJ Abrams, for some reason, he just, instead of just saying no comment, he said, oh, no, that's a lie. No, it's not. No, it's not. Don't lie, because we're about to see the movie, and you turn out to be a liar. And not only was it Khan, but it was just a terrible story overall, and the story was just awful. And when the third one came out, I had zero expectations.
Yeah.
And my brother, who was kind of, you know, meh on the first two, really thought three was excellent.
Three was three. Superb. It was. Yeah. And it's a shame it didn't do so well. It didn't do as well. I think that's
because of Into Darkness.
Exactly.
Fans were turned off, and fans, like me, like I said, the only reason I went, I was like, well, I saw the first two. Let me go ahead and do it. Even though I thought it was going to be bad.
Yeah.
But a lot of people and the same thing. Genesis killed the series. Dark Fate didn't, I hate to keep going back to Terminator here, but Dark Fate didn't kill Terminator.
Yeah.
Genesis did.
Yeah.
Genesis was an awful story. And I got a free ticket to Genesis, and I still feel cheated. It was so bad.
You still feel like they owe you money, even though you didn't pay for the ticket.
Exactly. And things like that can crush a franchise.
Yeah.
And so, to be honest, there's nothing they could have done to Terminator at this point that I think could have saved it. I mean, to be honest, you think, oh, James Cameron back. Oh, Linda Hamilton's back. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're making this better. Yeah, that should have worked. And if it would have come out before Genesis, I think it would have worked, maybe. But now, no one's going to give that. I'm not even going to watch Dark Fate. I just have zero interest in the series as a whole.
Yeah.
Because it just crashed and burned for me when Genesis came out. And it's hard to recover from a bad film.
Did you stay away from Dark Fate altogether?
Yes.
Yeah. Will you watch it on streaming later?
No. I thought about it. Because I thought about it. I was like, you know what? I really am not interested. I have tons of other films I'd rather watch.
Yeah.
I don't want to get sidetracked, but an underrated sequel that didn't make money this year that I just recently saw was Dr. Sleep, the sequel to The Shining.
And that made it on Quentin Tarantino's favorite films for the year too.
Well, Quentin was on to something because that movie got passed over by fans and critics.
Yeah.
And so I was hesitant. I wanted to go, and then I didn't hear good things. So I was like, okay. I recently saw this movie this past week, and I turned to my wife and I went, that was actually really good.
Yeah.
Is it better than The Shining? Absolutely not. But as a sequel goes, it's not bad. I really enjoyed it. I thought they did a pretty decent job. Now, mm-hmm. I hear they kind of tied the book in the Shining movie together a little bit better for fans.
Yeah.
I don't care because I didn't read the Stephen King novels, mm-hmm. but I still enjoyed Dr. Sleep. And I'm kind of sad that that movie didn't do as well as they wanted it to, because, and I'm kind of confused why not. I don't, maybe it just wasn't marketed that well. I don't know, but it honors the Shining movie pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And the storyline is, I wasn't bored. It didn't drag. Have you seen this? Have you seen Dr. Sleep?
No, I'm sad to say that I have not seen it. I blame it a lot on being still a new dad, missing a lot of movies in the theaters. Yeah,
right. But
I try to watch as many shows as I can though on streaming. So that's where a lot of my entertainment comes from, is what I can get on my little box.
Right, right. Now, the thing with Disney Plus, you've been enjoying The Mandalorian. I've been enjoying old 90s cartoons.
Yeah, did you get the Disney Plus? You still got it?
Yeah, I'm with Verizon. We got a year for free.
Okay.
So they got me, and the only thing that interested me was DuckTales Rescue Rangers, Tailspin, and Darkwing Duck. Since then, I've added some Disney classic movies like The Apple Dumpling Gang 1 and 2, The Absent-Minded Professor. I'm adding a few of those to my list. I don't have that much that's interesting to me on Disney Plus. I was slightly disappointed, but I understand they can't put everything out.
Well,
at the very beginning. I understand that too.
That's a business thing too, I think, to try to trickle things out.
I totally agree with that. It's just that a lot of things I would have been looking forward to is not streaming.
Oh, same here. Yeah, there's some things I was looking for and I couldn't find yet. I was impressed with the classics that were on there.
Yes. Yes. And my wife was really loving it. I mean, she's the one loving all the Disney movies at the touch of her fingertips right there. Me, like I said, I've just been walking down Nostalgia Road with Rescue Rangers, Tailspin, mm-hmm. which is actually a better cartoon than I remembered it being.
Yeah.
And Darkwing Duck, which sadly...
Oh, Darkwing, yes.
Darkwing's great. Don't watch it again.
Oh,
it didn't age well.
It doesn't travel well. That's too bad.
It doesn't. Where Tailspin actually is a much smarter film or smarter series than I gave it credit for as a kid, which was really surprising to me too.
You know,
so I'm going back and giving these old cartoons a second run through. And it's something for me to do when I'm eating my breakfast in the morning, or waiting
you can watch
for something.
I'll
pop in a 20-minute episode.
Yeah, because you can watch those kind of while you're in passing, just sort of have them on in the background and still be able to get a good idea of what's going on.
Just recently, actually last night, my wife and I watched, I'd never seen it, my wife had it on video, what was it, Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves, the third direct-to-DVD sequel to the Honey, I Shrunk the series, with Rick Moranis,
which is a big
surprising his role.
That's a big question. And that's going back into the Ghostbusters. That's a big question mark right now with the Ghostbusters, because he's the only original cast member that, as of right now, is not officially attached to the film, and that's not a surprise, because he's been retired after the passing of his wife. He's been retired from acting, just focusing on being a dad.
He's taken a step back. He's done very, I mean, he did Brother Bear 1 and 2. He lent his voice to that.
Yeah.
He did do the Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves sequel or threequel. He did that after his wife's passing. But at the same time, he was winding down his career to be with his kids. And that's very respected.
Yeah,
his kids are all grown up and done. But the thing is, though, I remember in an interview he said they offered him a cameo in 2016. He said he didn't see the point.
Yeah.
Now, he's done some stuff for the SCTV 35th anniversary. He did a Bob – I didn't know this, but he did a Bob and Doug McKenzie reunion clip. For SCTV.
I did not know that. No, I did not.
Yeah,
know
I did.
That.
I just found this out because I was looking into him last night. So
I was just listening. I was just listening to something that they did on the '80s satellite radio station that they played yesterday.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
yeah. So and he's an interesting character because he could come back. He could be a star. He could be big, in my opinion. But he chooses not to. I think he's enjoying.
He's like extremely talented. He's extremely talented.
Like Joe Pesci, he's enjoying retirement, and he only comes out when The Irishman. Have you seen The Irishman?
Oh, yeah, I did. We watched that over Thanksgiving, the day it came out, actually. We watched it.
Real quick take on this. I felt that we were watching a director's cut, and I wanted to see the actual movie. And it just, I mean, how long is that movie? 3.5 hours?
3.5, yeah.
And it felt to me, I mean, it's fine. And by the way, that's Joe Pesci's best performance ever. It's amazing that the man comes out of retirement and gives one of his best performances. But overall, you're like, I felt like we were watching there's a scene. I hate this. I'm sorry. I'm getting a sidetracked here.
No, that's fine.
The scene where there's they talk about the fish that was in the car and it smells like fish how you should wrap a fish in a car.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Why is that scene in there? Yeah. You know, the stuff like that is what they could have cut Irishman down to a nice 2-hour film if they wanted to. And to Netflix's credit, they said, Scorsese, do whatever you want.
Yeah, that's what happened. That's what happened. He had carte blanche. And gave him
sadly,
that. Yeah.
Because what we got was not a mess. We just got a director's cut before we got the actual movie. This would have been nice to see if we'd been like, oh, okay, I know why they cut this. Because the story stretches a little bit too long in parts, and there's a lot of scenes like the fish scene that I think didn't have to be there, and it almost feels that they were ad-libbing anyway during that scene.
I feel like Netflix is trying to make that their MO too. I think they're giving these big names because they want to lure these big names in, and one of the things the big names don't get sometimes is that kind of like here's
complete
the
control.
Complete control. They sometimes, even as big as stars as they are, they sometimes still have to follow the suit's guidelines of what they want taken out of a film or how short they want a film to be to make a theatrical release time that they're satisfied with. So I think like these big stars, like Adam Sandler has been doing Netflix projects now for a couple of years. Eddie Murphy now is on board and he's doing Netflix stuff.
I didn't see This Is Dolemite, but I've heard good things.
Oh, yeah. It's going to go. I mean, it's in my top five favorites for this for this year.
I need to give that a shot.
Now, being that I haven't seen Dr. Sleep, so there's a couple of them that I missed. But right now, for me, it's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Definitely Dolemite. And I really enjoyed The Irishman. I don't know if it's in my top five, but
not a bad film. I'm not saying it's a bad film. I just felt like I got the director's cut, and I was like, I could have done. I want to see the regular movie first.
For me, the best part about The Irishman were the stars and seeing them all back together again, working together again.
But Joe Pesci doesn't play his regular angry little man.
No.
And I was very pleased that he. Honestly, I think this is Joe Pesci's best role.
Yeah, I mean, if it doesn't get him a supporting actor. Nomination.
He's great.
Yeah, he's great. It's a nomination. Something's wrong. But yeah, he again, an actor that was pulled out of retirement because he was done with acting.
Yeah. Happily done with acting. He only came back because his friends came back to do a movie and asked him.
Yeah.
And the thing is, though, to brush that off and then deliver probably one of the best performances of your career is very impressive to me.
Yeah.
So for that alone, yeah. No, it wasn't a bad film. I just felt like we're getting a director's cut here, and I didn't need this.
Yeah. And we split that in half. We watched it over two nights.
Yeah. It took me three.
the Irishman. Yeah. We did it as kind of a two-parter, but... I still enjoyed it.
It's still engaging. You're still engaged for that 3.5 hours. But I did feel like I was watching deleted scenes here and there. So, sprinkled throughout.
I'm going to sprinkle this throughout. Agree or disagree?
Ooh.
For you, Master Jedi Matt Wilkins.
Let's do this.
Are you ready?
Let's do it. So ready.
Were you a fan of the Back to the Future movies?
Yes.
In the 80s. Another big IP from the 1980s. You know, those. It's Star Wars, Karate Kid, it's the Ghostbusters, it's the Back to the Futures.
It's what we now call classic cinema.
From the 1980s, yeah. And that was another one of those, another huge IPs was the Back to the Future. Have you ever seen the Eric Stoltz, the footage of him playing Marty McFly that was originally shot, that's on YouTube?
I saw a documentary that included some of those shots, yes.
Yeah, he was the original Marty McFly. They went and completely reshot that film because it wasn't working with him. I'm sure you know the story with him as Marty McFly. He was coming off as too dark and too emo and not funny enough. They wanted it to be, you know, more lighthearted, I guess. And Michael J. Fox, who is who they originally wanted to be Marty McFly, but they couldn't get him freed up from his contract with Family Ties.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Back to Future question for you.
All right.
Are you familiar with this deep fake technology that they're doing to make people look like they're in a video that they're not?
Yes. The George Lucas Talks About the Rise of Skywalker trailer is probably one of the best things I've seen all year long.
Oh my gosh. That is brilliant, isn't it?
All right, guys. Well, is this the background that we're going to use? Is there a way we can do like a green screen? We bring in a green screen there, Jimmy. He just follows me around with a green screen.
Have you ever done a reaction before?
I've reacted. Certainly. I've reacted at these, but never like this before.
All right, good. So we're going to hit play and we're going to roll on.
Okay. Oh, God, kill me. Oh, there it is. There's my name. It's another check for Daddy. Is this Endor? Oh, he dropped something. The plot. There's Rey. Oh, what character development. What an arc for Rey, huh? I mean, Jesus Christ, at the end of Empire, Luke had his hand taken off and Han Solo was in carbonite or whatever.
It's absolutely hilarious.
And
so, yes, that's what you're talking about by deepfake, right?
Yeah, exactly. And frighteningly pretty right on, the one with the one that they did with the George Lucas in his commentary is pretty good. But they actually have one now where it's a roundtable discussion between Tom Cruise, George Lucas, and Robert Downey Jr. Have you seen that one yet?
I am familiar with it. I have not seen it yet.
Okay, that's the sequel then. That's the one you got to follow up.
I've got to watch that.
Yeah, that's the next one you got to watch. Well, they've done one with Back to the Future. And they have it where it looks like Michael J. Fox is back in the saddle with Christopher Lloyd, with Doc, on a new adventure. And it's a parody where they land in the future, but this time it's the actual real 2019 and not the version of the 2000, that the versions of the 2000s that were in the movie, but the actual real version that we ended up seeing in our reality. And so there's some funny bits in there. I'll give you one teaser. There's a part where they go to a TV and they see the Sharknado movie. And Marty is like, oh, wait, I thought it was supposed to be flying cars, not flying sharks. So, but I mean, it looks amazing.
I'll have to watch that, too. I did. The only one I've seen, I think, has been the George Lucas one. Someone showed me that, and I really did enjoy it.
So the deepfake technology is probably the coolest thing, but also the scariest thing that's happening right now in special effects.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the repercussions that could come from that in the future, as that technology gets better, there's going to be a lot of ways that could be used for evil.
Yes.
But it's also, right now, it's a lot of fun in some of the things. And one person commented on that George Lucas video that you were talking about, that this could be the future of Saturday Night Live.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, this might be the future of those late night, you know, comedy shows. Well, anyway, they did one for Michael J. Fox. And obviously with Michael J. Fox, you know, probably there would have been a push at this point in time for there to be a Back to the Future sequel.
Mm.
If it had not been for the health of Michael J. Fox and whether he could carry on the role in the way that we're used to seeing Marty McFly portrayed. And we all love Michael J. Fox.
Of course.
But you know that idea that's been thrown out there before, the idea of doing more Back to the Futures.
Yeah.
I mean, with all the IPs that they're rebooting and they're revitalizing, I'm sure there's been talk about it. So I want to pitch this idea to you. The deepfake video went viral and it's been huge on the web. Would you agree or disagree that the streaming platforms maybe should consider maybe doing a revitalization of Back to the Future, but not as a live action, as a cartoon, but a cartoon geared towards the more like older adult audience? Would you agree or disagree with that idea?
Ooh.
A Back to the Future cartoon. Now, they did a Back to the Future cartoon years ago that was more of a kiddie version back in the 80s. But I'm just thinking, you know, they got Hanna-Barbera. You mentioned Scooby-Doo earlier. Hanna-Barbera, they're taking some of these old Hanna-Barbera cartoons like Scooby-Doo and the Flintstones, and the Cartoon Network are doing new versions of those, but geared towards an older audience.
Right.
So they're not going to be, you know, necessarily kids' versions of the Flintstones or kids' versions of the Scooby-Doo cartoon. I mean, I would assume the Scooby-Doo cartoon done more for adults is going to have more nostalgia in there, and it's probably going to have some pot jokes in there that wasn't in the original, that's going to be referencing more of that, the portrayal.
Or the adult crowd.
Yeah. So would you agree or disagree the idea of maybe a Back to the Future animated series?
Shockingly, I'm going to disagree because I feel like let's leave well enough alone in this case.
Yeah.
And only because it's animated, I feel like, can it still be good? Possibly. But do I need any more stories with Marty McFly? Is that what I'm screaming for?
Mm-hmm.
And for me personally, no. I do have a Back to the Future super fan who may disagree with me on that one. But for me, I would say no.
Is that your wife?
No, actually, it's an old buddy of mine.
Yeah.
He is a huge... I mean, he has the skateboard. He dressed as Marty McFly from the first, second, and I don't know about the third movie since it's a cowboy, but he does have the multicolored hat, the jacket with one sleeve not operating, you know, one sleeve longer than the other. He's a pretty big fan of those movies.
Yeah. But you think it might be just redundant at this point?
I think so. I don't know if they have any more story to tell, and I don't know if I want to hear any more stories. Because, it's kind of it's laughable that two got the future wrong, but who cares? It's fun. It's movies.
Well,
I
think they got some of the future right. They just were a little bit. we're still haven't caught up to it yet.
Well, no, that's true.
Well, the flying car part. I mean that will happen. But it's going to be much later than what they predicted. The Cubs did win the World Series, but I think they were off by, 5 or 6 years?
No, they were just off by 1 year.
Oh, okay. So much closer. Yeah.
Pretty incredible.
So they did get that. And to be honest,
everyone thought it was going to happen that year.
It's true.
I believe it was 2016 was the year they went to, correct?
It almost happened. Yeah, it almost happened the year that
2015.
They
predicted. And it was the 2015. And the Mets, swept an incredible Cubs team that year.
Yeah.
And the Mets have a t-shirt, and I kind of want it because it says McFly was wrong, and the M in McFly is the Mets emblem.
Oh, that's funny.
And that's, I kind of want that shirt because I had baseball fans raging against me, like, Matt, don't you want, you know, because everyone was talking about, you know, how, you know, Back to the Future 2 had predicted this. Don't you want Back to the Future 2's prediction to be correct? No, I want my Mets to win. If they weren't playing my Mets, then yeah, go Cubs. But unfortunately, the Mets broke it up. No, not unfortunately. Fortunately, the Mets broke it up. And I was, my finger still thinking about being on the trigger of that McFly was wrong t-shirt because it's just, it's so smart.
Number two, were you a fan of the Dark Knight movies, Christopher Nolan's Batman?
Oh, this is a hard one. The first one I thought was enjoyable. Second one is really good. And the third one is garbage.
So you didn't like the Bane one?
I despise Dark Knight Rises.
Really? What was it about that bothered you? Anything particular or just a lot of things?
When you have spinal damage, it takes more than a monk punching you in the spine in a prison for you to get recovered.
Gotcha.
Bane looks hokey. Catwoman is terrible. There is a lot wrong with that movie. And yeah. Christopher Nolan really let me down. I'm not a big fan of Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy there. Like I said, I thought Batman Begins was decent. I did enjoy it. I thought the second one was really good. You know, Heath Ledger's Joker, of course, is a great take on the Joker that we hadn't seen before. And so I had high hopes for the third one, and it just fell flat.
Yeah.
For me. It really did.
Well, then you might be in favor of then what I'm about to ask you. So they're rebooting Batman yet again. As I'm sure you followed this story. Robert Pattinson from Twilight is going to be taking over the role of Bruce Wayne, aka Batman. And so I hear in this new Batman it's going to be more of a detective. Batman the detective. This is the angle they're going for. So Dave Bautista from Guardians of the Galaxy has been, there was a story that came out after he posted a tweet that started a rumor or story that he could possibly, here's actually the superhero genre has been dominating the film industry for about a decade and showing no signs of slowing down. As such, plenty of studios have gotten in on the action with their own cinematic universe. And some actors have been appearing in multiples, like Josh Brolin, who has been in a couple of different, playing a couple of different characters in a couple of different superhero series. So fans were freaking out about the possibility that there's been talk of actor Dave Bautista possibly playing Bane in the new Batman. Would you agree or disagree that Dave Bautista would be a killer choice to play Bane in the new Batman?
I'd be interested in seeing that. I really want to see Riddler. He's my favorite Batman villain, and I've only gotten to see him played by Jim Carrey.
Yeah, in recent years, yeah.
Which wasn't bad, but it can be done better.
Yeah, and there was talk at one point about in the Christopher Nolan Batmans about maybe there being a Riddler. I remember one of the rumors one time was Johnny Depp playing the Riddler in Christopher Nolan's Batmans.
The producers, I believe, wanted Riddler, and Christopher Nolan said no. He thought Riddler was silly, and he wants a real-life villain, which is another reason why I don't think Christopher Nolan's movies are the best Batman movies either. I appreciate Tim Burton's more comic book feel. People, you can make fun of it all you want. Say, oh, Matt, you like Joker riding on a big, oh no, the Penguin riding on a big rubber ducky and penguins strapped with missiles on their backs. Yes, that's comic book Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
I accepted that because it's a world of Batman, a guy that dresses up as a bat. Yeah. Things have got to be a little kooky in that town. So I like his look and feel of Gotham the best. Yeah. Christopher Nolan did not want to make a superhero film. He wanted to make it as realistic as he could, which is why Batman's vehicles look militaristic. You know, the Batmobile looks nothing like a bat at all.
Yeah.
You know, so, and the ears are so shaved down.
Yeah.
You know, he tries to make that at least like a least likely bat costume as he could to fit in the real world. Nice. I know what you're going for, but that's not the Gotham that I like.
Mm-hmm. He's going for gritty, gritty Batman.
Right.
Yeah. The grittiest of the gritty. So that one, you agree, you would be interested in seeing that.
I'd be interested, sure.
Yeah, he's a good actor. I loved his work. Okay, so I don't know if you've caught this story. Of course, you know, I'm sure by now you know that there is going to be yet another John Wick. We're going to get John Wick 4 in a few years, a couple of years. Right. And we're also going to get new Matrix movies.
Yes.
So it was announced the other day that the release date has been announced for both Matrix 4 and John Wick 4, and they both have landed on the same day. So right now, as of right now, the release date for Matrix 4 and John Wick 4 are on the same date.
Wow.
So this has been a huge story, and now the internet has already started calling it Keanu Reeves Day. It's going to be official Keanu Reeves Day, and some people are saying, yeah, I'm going to make a day of it. I'm going to go to the theater. I'm going to go see John Wick 4, and then I'm going to finish the day out going to go see Matrix 4. But here's my question for you. And then some people think, oh, this was just a mistake. This is a bad idea. There's no way that the studios are going to allow this to happen because they're competing with themselves. Right. It's basically Keanu competing with Keanu. So that, which I think that could be a movie there, Keanu competing with Keanu. But so my question for you is, a lot of people have speculated that they, one of the studios is probably going to eventually bend and move their movie off that date. Do you agree or disagree that this is a bad idea and then one of the studios do need to move their film off this date?
I'll go even farther. One of the studios is going to blink.
Yeah.
And it may be John Wick 4 because Matrix is the bigger production. However, production could get delayed on Matrix 4, which would push back the date.
Yeah, has that been talked about?
Well, no, but because it's just a bigger production, that is a possibility. We both know that that's always a possibility with these big budget movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that one of those will break. I'm excited to see both. But to be honest, John Wick 4 far exceeds Matrix for me right now.
Yeah, you're more excited about another John Wick than you are another Matrix.
John Wick may be one of the most brilliant franchises we have today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And there's a John Wick universe because they're going to do a show at some point about the hotel, a spinoff series.
And the thing is, have you seen John Wick 3?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Shockingly, the best of the series. I didn't think I was going to say that because I thought John Wick 1 would always be superior.
Mm-hmm.
John Wick 2 was just an absolute blast, but it doesn't, you know, back to back, John Wick 1's the best. Mm-hmm. When 3 came out, I was thinking, okay, it's probably going to be on par with 2, maybe a little bit better, but it's not going to beat 1. It's still going to be good. It's one of the best movies, you know, by far. One of my favorite 2019, that's for sure.
Yeah. No, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I may still be the first one may still be my favorite.
And that's great because it's a solid film, but the third one just, I don't know. It was, you talk about entertaining popcorn ride.
Yeah.
And a popcorn movie. Where you sit back, I laughed. It's not supposed to be funny, I'm sure, but I laughed because I was thoroughly shocked and entertained by the first 30 minutes alone before the movie takes a breath. And then it keeps going strong. It goes into the lore for a little while. Then we got the hotel action scenes where it picks back up and is just phenomenal. And anyone, this movie has like 3 different endings. You feel like it's going to end and it doesn't.
Yeah.
But all of them, it's like they came up with 3 different ideas to end the movie and said, well, let's do all 3. And all 3 are excellent.
Yeah.
They're excellent ways to end the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I just absolutely, for anyone who hasn't seen it, there's a scene where these people are coming out with body armor that is bulletproof. So John Wick has to shoot them over and over again
with
inside their bulletproof armor and then find ways of killing them, like reaching the gun through the crevice in their helmet to kill them or doing something inventive to get them to die in a bulletproof coating. It is something that an action movie has never shown me before.
Mm-hmm.
And just when you think you've seen it all, John Wick ups the ante. There's a knife throwing scene at the beginning.
Yes.
Toward the beginning, which is just fantastic. I've never seen that in an action film. This is the thing. There's a horse fighting scene, for crying out loud. The scene where he fights with a book at the very beginning.
Yes.
A book is the weapon, and it's great. As action movies go, this broke the mold. You saw things that you've never seen in an action movie before.
Yeah.
It's just that incredible. It is that incredible. I've never been so shocked with action since the Punisher series 1 on Netflix.
Yeah.
When they did some cool stuff in Punisher, the TV show. But
yeah.
John Wick 3 just blew me away with their action. It's we have our regular gunplay with him and Halle Berry, shooting up the place, which is always fun. But we've seen most of that before. It's more stylish, more like realistic in a way, if I can say that.
Yeah.
And the first movie is solid, solid, solid. But the third movie just, when I enjoy a movie, I laugh because I'm just enjoying myself so much with the movie. It's not because it's funny. It just makes me laugh. And I was laughing hard the 30 minutes going, this is great. I'm the only one in the theater just laughing at the knife fight going, this is great. This is awesome. You know, I was thoroughly entertained. That movie just blew me away. So John Wick 4 all the way. Matrix I can wait on. John Wick 4 I can't.
Yeah. Are you worried about more Matrix movies? There being more Matrix movies? Do you think that's maybe an idea that's already run its course?
Yes and no. Sadly, those movies, they should have stopped after the first one.
Yeah.
The second one's decent. The third one is absolute garbage. But I love Keanu Reeves, and so if he wants to do it, let's do it. Same thing with, I don't care about Bill and Ted. They were fine, but Bill and Ted Face the Music, I'm going to see that. Why? Because John Wick has made me a Keanu Reeves super fan. I've always liked Keanu Reeves, but I'm a super fan now.
Yeah, I even liked
all watches of the movies. Yeah,
I even liked him in the movie with Patrick Swayze, the bank robber movie, the original.
Point Blank.
Yeah, I even
Point Blank is fantastic.
I loved Point Blank. I'll admit it. I actually liked Point Blank.
I've enjoyed Keanu Reeves here and there, but ever since these John Wick movies, the man's 50-something years old, and he is doing his own action scenes, and it is unbelievable.
He does his own shooting in those movies too. In the John Wick movies,
you've seen the footage of him taking shots at practice. The man is, someone made a joke, he's the most deadliest man in Hollywood right now, and he is.
Yeah,
but I hear, you only hear great stories of how humble he is, how down to earth he is, how much he cares about his fellow cast members and crew. I mean, there is not one vain thing said about Keanu Reeves, and you have to respect that too.
He's the darling of the interwebs.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, right now he for is. Sure. Yeah, he seems to be a really nice guy. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with Bill and Ted's too, to see what that. And I think those two actors, him with it Alex Winters?
Yeah,
yeah, they have great chemistry together. So I'll give them a shot and see what they.
Well, this is a movie Keanu Reeves has wanted to make for the past couple of years.
Yeah,
he's finally getting his way.
Yeah,
and if he wants to make it good, let the man do anything he wants. Does Bill and Ted need a sequel? Absolutely not. Will I watch it? Yes. Am I a big Bill and Ted fan? Nope. But I'm going to watch it because Keanu Reeves is my man.
And well, we were talking about, you probably don't get Ghostbusters Afterlife without Cobra Kai being what it was. Or had or is, and I don't think you get Bill and Ted's Face the Music without there being John Wick. I think John Wick reestablished Keanu Reeves as a real force in Hollywood.
Absolutely agree.
And because of that, I think that's what pushed him over the top. So the timing for them to be able to wait on Bill and Ted's and stay patiently. Persistently, much like Dan Aykroyd was with Ghostbusters and getting the Ghostbusters he wanted to make made. Same thing with Keanu Reeves and him persistently kind of sticking with the idea of doing more Bill and Ted's and kind of waiting until the time was right and they could strike. And that's what happened as a result of the success he's had with the, in fact, if there's anything that Keanu Reeves has been wanting to do as far as projects for a while, this is definitely a time for him to strike because he's got a lot of equity right now.
No, I totally agree.
Yeah. And I think with the John Wicks, I think they can make 9 or 10 of those.
Oh yeah,
they could go. They could go on for quite a while.
Totally, and I hope they do.
Yeah,
I'm still entertained. It's everything I wish Die Hard still was.
Yeah, exactly. And they've been trying to do another Die Hard for a while. And the last I heard on that was the idea they wanted to do was to do sort of a prequel sequel.
I'm fine with that because 5 sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, but I like the Live Free and Die Hard with Kevin Smith.
I do love that film. I think that film is excellent.
Yeah, and then they jumped the shark with the one that followed it. And
that's sad.
Yeah, which
it's sad to see that does not deserve to be a Die Hard film.
Yeah, which was such a shame because I thought Live Free and Die Hard, like you agree with me, that was really good.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
So now it is time for Thoughts and Advice. On this 114th episode of the Thunderpop Podcast, Matt, here's something for you.
Nope. We'll never get it out now.
So certain are you? Always with you, it cannot be done. Do you nothing that I say?
Master, moving stones around is one thing. This is totally different.
No. No different. Only different in your mind. You must unlearn what you have learned.
All right, I'll give it a try.
No. Why not? Do. Or do not. There is no try.
And by the way, in the room next door, I've got some Tiff's treats waiting on me. So, do you know about the Tiff's treats, Matt?
No.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't know if they've gotten into Louisiana. It's a company that started in Texas and actually here in Austin, and you can get warm cookies delivered to your house.
Shut up.
The best concept ever. You can get warm cookies and milk delivered to your house.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it was started here in Austin, and they are going I think they are going nationwide. So eventually, you may have one in your neighborhood, and you can get warm cookies delivered to your house anytime. And they have like 10 different flavors. But I'm losing my voice. So I'm going to go get those cookies. And Matt Wilkins, thank you, sir. And if I don't get to talk to you before the holidays, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to you.
Merry Christmas to you, brother. Thanks again for having me on. Always fun.
Thank you. I'll let you get back to that nap that you were having earlier.
Yeah, thanks.
And you, sir, have a good one and a happy new year. And everyone out there, have a good day, month, second, millisecond. And I'm losing my voice. Good night. And Thunderpop is a Hit the Bricks production.